Hey, everybody. Just a couple things. First, we had some technical disasters while recording this episode, so the sound is kind of weird. Apologies for that. Also, thanks to one of my true crime heroes, Aphrodite Jones, for being on the show today. Make sure you check out her podcast, Sex, Love, and Murder, wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. And finally, don't forget the next Unpop stand-up show is happening next week, Wednesday, September 6th at the Alex Theater in Glendale. I'll be hosting Carrie Martin, Chet Wilde, Vanessa Gritton, and John Fahey from the Unpops Network will be there telling jokes. And your headliner is my friend and former co-worker, Alex Schmidt. Go to eventbrite.com and search for Unpops to reserve your spot. Thanks. We'll see you there. Enjoy the show.
El futuro tiene nada más que la confrontación.
Hey, welcome to Unpopular Opinion. I'm your host, Adam Todd Brown. I used to write a bunch of weekly columns for a bunch of internet places, and I would use those columns to put forth all sorts of crazy opinions. Then I'd come on this show to defend those opinions. But now I don't really do any of that shit. I just do this show. Joining me today, he's one of the best comics working right now. Even better, he's my co-host on the What in the World podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, he is a staple of the Unpops Network, Quincy Johnson II. Also joining me, she's written 8 best-selling books about true crime. She hosts a TV show on Investigation Discovery called True Crime. And she's the host of the Sex, Love, and Murder podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Aphrodite Jones. It's going to be a great show.
Everybody, welcome to Unpopular Opinion.
Hey! Oh, I like this.
This is fun.
I like an unpopular opinion with me and Quincy on it.
You and Quincy, and we're going to call our other guest in a second, Aphrodite Jones.
Mighty Aphrodite Jones.
True crime writer. We're going to talk about the Michael Jackson trial.
I'm talking about.
And we're also going to talk about the Bill Cosby retrial.
Ooh, a little bit. Okay, I'm going to as an ally, I'm not allowed to talk about this.
Aphrodite Jones.
Wait, real quick. What do you mean ally?
Ally to Michael Jackson.
Yikes!
But, no, this is going to be a really interesting episode. Michael Jackson is one of those celebrity cases where I, for the longest time, have been like, oh yeah, he definitely did that. And Aphrodite Jones wrote a book called Michael Jackson Conspiracy. And after reading
it... an album.
Yeah, it does. And after reading it, I am not so sure. So we're going to call her in a few minutes.
Adam reads books.
Chit-chat with her. I know, it's weird.
Hearing Adam say that, this is literally the whole birther scandal with Trump all over again.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
This is a new day, man.
So before we give her a call, how's everyone doing? Quincy Johnson's here.
Hey, guys, I'm Quincy Johnson. I'm great, man, hanging out, having a good time. It's hot outside.
It's been a while since you've been on an Unpops cast.
Yeah, I've been avoiding you, basically.
Oh, yeah,
I try to work you guys with as little as possible.
You guys were just recording when I walked in here.
Don't tell people that. Whoa, wait. Hey, Fabe.
Oh, wow. Way to destroy the magic.
Hey, Fabe, baby.
Way to destroy the magic, Jeff.
That's what I do.
That was way too inside baseball.
I'm the second grader that finds out about Santa and tells
Adam, the class. I'm sorry. I haven't been here in a while. My first time back, Jeff ruins everything. I'm sorry.
Join my new show, Jeff Ruins
Jeff
Everything.
Ruins Everything on True TV.
Nice.
Court TV. It's warm.
It is. I have the air pumping.
Crested still, to 102.
Yeah, it
in
is.
In the old Burbank today.
It is toasty in L.A. these days.
Those old folks in Burbank gonna die.
If you ain't Conan O'Brien, you melting in Burbank today.
Yeah. It's bad times.
That's all right.
So, Jeff, how have you been?
Good. I was in Palm Springs this weekend. 120 yesterday.
Jeez. Yeah, I like that graphic you posted where... when it said 113, it said heating up. And the day before it was 108. It's like it was heating up the day before.
Yeah.
Once it hits triple digits, it's heating up.
I drove by a church with that has one of those like billboards that shows the fire. It shows the temperature.
Okay.
And I was like, I think once it hits 120, you have to admit there's no God.
Yeah.
Once you get to that, you're like, okay, yeah, we're gonna shut this down now.
Yeah.
That town shouldn't exist. Like Palm Springs shouldn't exist. Like, when you go there, you're like, this is all artificial. It's hot as fuck. It's abrasive to the human condition. Everything that exists here is only because of, like, crazy irrigation to get stuff in there. Like,
look at Japan, though. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's worth it when you look at Japan.
Yeah, yeah, you're crispy right now, John.
Yeah, man, we just have the lights off. Turn these lights. I practically glow, man. Wolf lamp ain't even on.
Yeah.
it's just absorbing my natural light.
Did you see we finally hung prints up?
Oh, I saw that. I was looking in the market for stuff for you, and I almost got you a record that was... Did you see the RoboCop one that I got?
Oh, yeah.
It was like that, but it was kind of prints.
Oh,
that
nice.
Was the exact same picture.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, well, that would be egregious.
Yeah.
So instead, I got you nothing.
Well, I mean, that's egregious, too, but it's fine. So should we get Aphrodite Jones on the horn?
Sure.
Are we excited? Who here thinks Michael Jackson's guilty?
I do. I think I do.
Yeah, I still have some questions.
Nah. My follow-up questions are, hey, what's up with all that porn?
Yeah, I did want to
put all that child-related pornography.
Hey, man, that literally he just didn't erase his browser history. That's all. Like, he just looked at it.
No. See, not erasing your browser history is the preface of that's all. The all part is the stuff before that didn't erase the browser history.
Oh, shit. I forgot to plug part of this in. Watch your ears, everybody.
I'm going to leave my thing plugged in.
Why would I not?
You know, it felt good.
So when we talk to her, she will be hearing us through the microphone on this laptop.
Okay.
So we'll have to just speak up if you ask her any questions.
Well, Aphrodite, what do you got going on with that? About to drive at 5.
All right. Let's give her a call.
I wish I had a good Larry King impression.
Yeah, what if we were all just
in person? That's all I remember from Larry.
Impressions.
In person.
And that's loud.
Turn it up.
Right? Hey! Is this Aphrodite?
There you are. Yes. How are you doing?
Really good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Thank you for doing the show. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me on.
This is Adam. I am one of the hosts. My co-host, Jeff May, is here.
Hey.
And... Quincy Johnson.
Hi, how are
comedian
you?
Comedian Quincy Johnson, our other guest.
Pleasure.
So, just to tell people a little about you, this is Aphrodite Jones that we're talking to. She's written 8 best-selling true crime books.
What?
8
books?
Right?
I haven't even read 8 books.
There aren't that many words.
Host of True Crime with Aphrodite Jones on Investigation Discovery.
Nice.
And host of the Sex, Love, and Murder podcast, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And keynote speaker at CrimeCon 2017.
What is a CrimeCon?
CrimeCon was actually the first ever kind of trying to be a Comic-Con event, and it actually was very successful. Over 1,000 people came to Indianapolis from all over the world, believe it or not, primarily the United States, but I mean Alaska and Hawaii, crazy places that they flew in from it. Nancy Grace, myself, Dr. Mankiewicz, and others were there, top people from the FBI, and there were, you know, loads of speakers. And the guys who prosecuted Stephen Avery also were there, you know, the whole Making a Murderer. So they were quite incredible, and, you know, people got to hear us speak about the inside stuff that goes on behind the scenes, you know, when you're really doing crime stories rather than just, you know, producing them for television or producing them for films, etc. So, I mean, people loved it, and they're going to continue with it. The next one is in Nashville in 2018. So, it seems to be, you know, some people love crime, and they love it more now than ever, which is strange to me, but I guess it's good for me. I don't know.
Well, it's very cool. It's funny, too, because when you think about, like, what people used to be into crime and serial killers, and you'd usually be like, don't look at me. Like, kind of steer clear of those people. And now it's become so mainstream that it's kind of like this thing. It's like, yeah, a convention does make sense now.
Well, that's it. And, you know, as far as I keep thinking that it was strange when I was approached by that, the people who did that convention, I was like, Jesus, you know, are people going to really pay for this? And they charged all the speakers did for free. But apparently, you know, people want to know. I mean, now that they're into hearing about how murders are solved and what kind of cases, you know, who's getting prosecuted that might be innocent, and all the rest of it. And I mean, this crazy evolution of podcasts, you know, in crime podcasts, it's just like they're brought by the heaps of mounds.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, I mean, people kind of feel like they want to really know the characters, the players, and the, like I said, the inside story. So, yeah, makes sense.
Oh, very cool. Well, congratulations on all your success with CrimeCon. It's great.
I read the Michael Jackson book over the weekend, and I really want to talk about that. That is, I think, media trials are, obviously they've been a huge part of our society and our culture for decades now, and the Michael Jackson trial is one of those trials where I just kind of always assumed that we got the whole story and he just had the money to beat the case. And after reading your book,
he beat it. Give me $5,000.
But after reading your book, it really changed my mind. And so I want to just kind of talk about that a little bit. What was the, you made a point in the book about what the atmosphere was like in that courtroom and how it kind of made people a little more sympathetic to what Michael Jackson himself was going through in terms of the constant attention and scrutiny he got. What, can you talk a little bit about what it was like in that courtroom?
Sure. And first of all, you got to put it in perspective that as big as O.J.'s trial was, and as much as we think of O.J. as being the trial of the century, the fact is Michael Jackson had and has perhaps more fans than anybody in the world, and certainly did when he was alive. And so you had 2,400 credentialed media covering this. Think about this. That's over 2,000 media people covering this trial from all over the world. And then you had, I don't know, just as many fans outside the gates screaming and yelling, and they were going up and back and forth to Neverland, and they were flying in from all parts of the world. It was really I don't know how else to describe it, but other than a media circus.
Wow.
And that was outside. That was on the outside.
Right.
But the thing was that no cameras were allowed inside. So everything was being filtered through the media. And when I wrote this book, Adam, I really felt like I was writing the end of my career.
Really?
I was outing the media, and I had worked for Fox News on that, for Bill O'Reilly to cover it. And, you know, I realized that I was being steered by the Fox producers and by O'Reilly, you know, who had his own definite bias against Jackson, as did most of the media. And they didn't ever want to hear anything that could possibly be exculpatory, that I was just never asked those questions. So, in other words, on days where there were things where the defense were winning points, they didn't want to even have me on. They didn't want to cover it. They just wanted to cover, you know, stuff that was sensational, Pajama Day, you know, when McCauley covered the show, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And I eventually wrote that book because I realized that once the trial was over and Jackson was exonerated, the whole media circus just pulled up their stakes and left. And nobody ever said a word about, hey, I guess we were wrong, or, you know, maybe we made a mistake, or there was just never anything. It was like, it was over.
Right.
They moved on to Natalie Holloway. That was the next story. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that the public never actually saw or heard what really went down at the trial and why the jury found him not guilty.
This all took place during that time period before the 24-hour news cycle?
This was in 2005. You know, this was the prelude to Michael Jackson's death, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
So once he was run out of Santa Barbara, Mesro told him, leave Santa Barbara. You'll never be left alone here in peace. So he left, and he went to Bahrain, if you recall, and then he went to Ireland for a while, and he landed back in the States, and that's when he went to do his, finally, he went to Vegas and started to, you know, get involved with his This Is It tour. But by that time, he was a man without a country, a man without a home. And think about Michael Jackson, the most recognizable person on the planet. Where do you go?
Yeah.
Where do you go to have any kind of refuge if you don't have a home to go to?
Yeah, he's kind of like a man out. He's just out. He's just got to walk around as like a pariah, almost.
He was a pariah, but also in person, people, it wasn't a pariah. People loved him. And they just wanted to be next to him and take pictures and get his autograph and rub his shoulder and touch him. And I mean,
yeah,
how do you function?
Yeah.
You can function.
Yeah, you can't get a moment's peace. Yeah.
Every minute.
Wow. I say, yeah, you can't get a moment's peace, let alone you still have that chip on your shoulder from never getting those retractions or getting any innocence broadcast in the media.
Anything.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you still have media now coming after him and saying, oh, there's another accusation, and oh, this, and oh, that. I mean, it just never ended for him. But, I got to know Michael Jackson because obviously I saw him, and I spoke with him briefly, and asked him some questions as a media person. And I got to know him also at the trial because I'm watching him every single day for 5 months. And the what I got to see of this person was that he was very humble, very shy, which you never kind of expect, I don't think, from Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
But also kind of almost naive in a sense that, I mean, he let Martin Bashir get open access to him for that documentary because he thought Bashir was going to make him into this wonderful guy who loved kids. He wanted to do a children's international holiday, which might sound goofy, but that's what he wanted.
Right.
And, Bashir just took advantage and took that opportunity to basically set Jackson up.
Wow.
Bring the kid in, Arvizo,
yeah,
this kid with cancer, who Jackson had helped, blood drives and whatnot with the family, and bring him up to Neverland and say, okay, let's shoot something with this kid that you helped so we can show how you help children. And then Bashir, according to my sources, suggested that they hold hands. Bashir set it up that they sit on the bed, that they hold hands, and it wasn't just my sources. We saw it in trial, too. There was testimony to this effect. Okay?
All right. Man.
And you know who testified to that? The mother of the accuser. So think about that.
Right.
It's not somebody that's a pro-Jackson person because she wants this conviction to go her way so that she can have a civil suit filed so she can collect $20 million.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was, sorry to cut you out. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's good.
Oh, I was just going to say that was one of the really interesting things in the book to me. We never, when this trial was happening, we never heard anything about the testimony from the two kids the Arvizo kids. And I think part of it had to do with the fact that the Pope was dying at the time.
Exactly. There were a couple of things going on. The Pope was dying, and so a lot of media picked up in the middle of it all and went over to Rome. So that was one thing. But the truth of the matter is, as I said before, nobody in the media wanted to hear that the testimony of the Arvizo kids, which are the accuser, and his brother and sister, that nobody wanted to hear that they had conflicting testimony.
Right.
They heard themselves on the stand. That Jay Leno came up on the stand and was called as a defense witness.
Wow.
Jay Leno, think about this. Leno, in his career, making fun of Michael Jackson, I mean, part of his career, at the end of his career, it never ended, with making jokes on Jackson. He was called, and he came in and testified and said that these are Arvizo family, because the kid had cancer, they were calling all kinds of celebrities asking for money and blood drives and this, and through Make-A-Wish, they called Jay Leno, and they got through to him, and he spoke to the boy, the accuser, Gavin Arvizo, and Leno tells the courtroom that the kid sounded rehearsed, that the kid sounded, quote, overly effusive, and he could hear a woman in the background telling the kid what to say. So in other words, and he, Leno, and I have actually met Leno on a couple of occasions. This is a guy who, would give his right arm for charity. He's really good that way. He told his people, don't ever let them get through to me again.
Wow.
This is what he testified to on the stand. So, I mean, these people, the Arvizos, they were after George Lopez, who testified that they were trying to pull the wool over his eyes and badgering him to do comedy fundraisers for them. They went after Chris Tucker. They wound up on the set of Rush Hour 3, and they were staying in a hotel at Chris Tucker's expense. Tucker was doing fundraisers for them, and then they had the audacity to move up to the fancier hotel that Tucker was living in, was staying in on location. I mean, and Tucker said to Michael Jackson, "Watch out, Mike. These are not the people you think they are."
Hmm.
And Jackson just, he's living in his own world anyway. And when these people are in Neverland, you have to understand Neverland is 2,700 acres. People, if you're not, if you've never been there and you don't think about, think about 2,700 acres.
Yeah, you could be on one side and have no idea what's happening on the other end of the property.
Yeah.
They were. There were times when they were there, and the kid had even testified, the accuser. He was there, and Michael supposedly wasn't on the property, and he saw Michael somehow, you know, whatever, in a golf cart going by or whatever it was. And he got really upset and hurt that Michael hadn't let him know that Michael was on the property. Because that was really what it was about, is the kid was feeling rejected by Michael Jackson. Because after the documentary was filmed, Jackson didn't want this family around anymore. He had already helped them. Now he did the documentary with Bashir. Now, you know, they were overstaying their welcome at Neverland. But he was, you know, he had enough guest house and whatever that, okay, fine, whatever. But he was going on with his world. And that's what's so interesting, guys, about this, is that it was after the Bashir documentary aired, and the whole world just went crazy. Oh, my God, he's holding hands with this kid in bed, saying we sleep in the same bed together. And everybody's going bonkers to get a hold of Jackson and or this Arbizo family. This is when they say that Jackson molested the boy. Not when he filmed the Bashir documentary, not when the kid was actually on the property in Neverland. Not when Jackson was helping the kid with cancer, who had no hair on his head and was in a wheelchair. No, no. After the Bashir documentary aired, this family of grifters said that then Jackson's people brought them to him so that they could figure out how they're going to, you know, quell all this media craziness because it wasn't true. In that time frame, when they're trying to be handlers of, you know, the whole craziness of the media with Bashir, this is when the family says that the kids say, Michael abused and molested the boy.
Yeah, that was one of the, that's a thing I definitely didn't know prior to reading the book, and that's the thing that I think kind of changed my mind the most, is that timeline makes no sense. Like, why at that moment would he decide, fine, this is when I'm going to finally molest this kid?
Yeah, like, well,
I mean, it makes no sense.
We all have to make the decision. You know,
just, bizarre.
It's not an if, it's a win.
60 Minutes, Barbara Walters, the whole world calling, you know, everybody down Michael Jackson's throat, and he's got his people bringing this family over to him to say, look, okay, you'll be at Neverland, we'll figure this out. They made a video at Neverland, which we saw in court, where they talked, and this is the family now, with the mother and the three kids, saying, we call him Daddy Michael. This is when the mother also, you know, he holds hands, and we was told to hold hands, and on the documentary, and he's been so good to my son, and the kid is going, yeah, he told me to eat up all the cancer like Pac-Man, and he really helped me, and he made me fight through this. And, I mean, this is what we kept seeing over and over again, that Michael Jackson was the only person who cared about them, and Michael Jackson was the only one who really was there for them through this cancer battle, which was made, this video was made after the Bashir documentary aired. So in the time frame that they were supposed, the kid was supposedly being molested, they make this video praising Michael to the nth degree.
Yeah.
Yes. That's fishy.
It's very fishy.
It's funny, too, because I don't mean to be like the guy that's like, well, but like, do you think a lot of this has to do with just the reputation Michael had in the past? Like, I mean, this wasn't his first ever settlement or anything involved, where people are like, oh, this is the kid-touching guy. Yeah, let's go after him.
Well, like, absolutely. There's no question about that. I mean, look, he made a settlement with Jordy Chandler, and it was for $20 million. And when that happened, I don't think anybody on the planet decided that, oh, he just decided to throw his money away, and it was nothing happened there. People feel that that was, you know, smoke and fire, and, you know, that it meant absolutely something happened. However, I interviewed Michael Jackson's manager, Frank DeLeo, who's now deceased. But at the time, he was actually at the trial. He was no longer the manager, but he was there to support Michael. And he told me that, and it's on my show, True Crime, and you can download it and watch it. DeLeo says to me, we canceled Jackson to give the money to Jordy Chandler because to him, it would be like a quarter. And I'm like, a quarter? Like $20 million is like a quarter? And DeLeo was insistent. He said, yeah, because at that time, Jackson stood to make billions of dollars. And he was this machine. This was in the 80s, making huge money for everybody. And, they, you know, they, 80s and 90s, they were not going to lose their money, their golden goose. So they thought that by paying off Chandler, that everything would go away.
Yeah, you wouldn't upset your superstar who was printing the money, and as opposed to dragging him through a trial, you just settle because that money really means nothing. That's the logic behind that decision making.
What's so stupid about it is, how are you going to prove that in a trial?
Yeah, exactly.
The truth of the matter is, they gave him really foolish advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard because whenever you see a settlement, the natural decision that the brain kind of goes to, oh, you settled? Guilty. Like that.
Which I don't necessarily agree with that because think of all the people. Me and Quincy were talking about a guy before the show, a guy I knew, as a kid who he made his whole living showing up at grocery stores and seeing water on the floor and going, oh, I slipped. You owe me $5,000. And they would just settle because
why go
fight the lawsuit? So I don't.
It's like giving into terrorist demands.
Yeah, I think it's.
It's a good point. And again, this is the thing that Tom Nesra was able to do during the trial is he was able to actually untangle all the previous accusers because they all took the stand, and some of them had gotten a settlement of $1 million or this and that, and some of them claimed that they were in psychiatric help for the rest of their lives because he tickled them. There were bizarre claims from some of these people, and some of them were people whose family members worked at Neverland. It just, seeing it in person and being there in person, you really question whether or not any of these accusers had anything valid or anything really happened to them.
Wow.
And yet, as we reported on the news, there were workers who were disgruntled employees who also took the stand to say, oh, we saw him in the jacuzzi with kids, and we saw him here, we saw him there. So that's not reported.
Yeah, right. There's a lot about Jackson that points to just a massive case of arrested development. I mean, there's so much from the physical abuse from his father. You hear it almost in the voice, and then sort of the actions around kids, where he's just like, I just like to be around kids. Like, it's like he's nine. Sort of his actions.
Totally. No question about it. I mean, when he talks about going up in a tree and performing music and writing his songs sitting in his tree, I thought he was guilty, and I was laughing. I'm like, this guy is a nut. How crazy can you be? But this is who he was. I mean, think about it. He had a chimpanzee, Bubbles. That was one of his best friends. I mean, he was in his own world. This guy was not living in the world that we understand. And he was famous from the time he could remember. He was on stage from the time he was five.
Mm-hmm.
His fame rose very quickly.
He's a product more than he is a person at this point in time to most of the American people. Like, people don't, it's like he's a living person, but people mostly look at it and be like, oh, that's just Michael Jackson. That's just not a person. That's an entity.
Well, yeah.
That's a great point. That's a great point because he even said at one point, there's inside footage that I we were able to see in court, some of which I have, he says in it, that hurts. When people say things about me, and they don't understand that. I listen to that. I hear that. And that's why I can't watch the news, because what they do is they just kind of make me look crazy. And he talked about the baby dangling incident and how,
which was crazy.
Which was crazy. Yeah. He was trying to show his fans the baby because they were down below his balcony begging for him to show them the baby. So he helped the baby out so they could see the baby. And it was crazy that he did it. But the thing is that he points out the media, the news, runs it over and over and over again. So the more they keep rerunning it in this, the cycle, the loop, the crazier he looks.
Yeah.
He was a good dad.
Yeah.
He did one crazy thing. Think about every person that you know on the planet. You think no person ever held their kid up the wrong way?
Definitely. I've definitely held my son up the wrong way.
That's the thing. He was under such a scrutiny, such a microscope. And, of course, Bashir was there to catch that moment. So documentary also. But didn't matter because it was all over the news, but think about if you were under that constant scrutiny every minute of your life. Like, you're basically living on TV. This is before there was reality TV. He was his own reality show, no matter what he did.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's the news was basically the Michael Jackson show,
right?
Long, forever, and it's all, and it was always, it was never like good news either.
Yeah,
it was always like, yeesh.
And you mentioned in the book, or you just mentioned a second ago, the pajama incident, which you touch on in the book also, which that's another thing that I always just, I think was always reported to us as, look at this crazy guy who showed up to court in his pajamas for no reason. And when you read the book, there's actually a valid explanation for
it. Slumber party?
Well, he was...
I mean, that's the funny thing, right? Slumber party. But we know he was on drugs. We know now that, you know, he was from the days of the Pepsi commercial, he was on painkillers. He, you know, supposedly cleaned up and then he went back. He clearly was at a hospital getting some kind of medications. And what happened was they called to the court and said, he's going to be late. He's in the hospital. And the judge said, if he doesn't get here by the time of court starting, we are going to put him in jail.
Wow.
That judge was very biased against
him. That's a dick move.
Yeah.
That's what happened. So the reason he showed up in pajamas was because they was literally, they sped at 100 miles an hour to get him there by the time of the start time, I think it was 8 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I believe. I think it was an early start time for that trial because I remember sitting outside at 5 and 6 in the morning waiting to get in. So it was just insane. So that's why that happened.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really interesting. And there's just so much in this book that I did not know about the Michael Jackson trial. And I think it's something people should definitely read. One thing I did, I don't know if you touched on it near the end of the book, there was that incident after Michael Jackson died where they allegedly went in and found a bunch of questionable porn in his possession. Do you have any insight on that? Is that...
I'll tell you exactly what that was about. That porn was in a storage locker, but that porn was all brought into court. We saw days and days and days of Michael Jackson's porn magazines. Some of them were Playboys. Some of them were teen porn magazines. None of them were gay porn. None of them were pedophilia porn. None of them were anything like that. But we saw it. The prosecution already had all that stuff. They showed it to us for days and days. It wasn't just like one or two magazines. It was like every magazine he ever had, they put it all on the screen and showed us the covers of these magazines.
Wow.
And it was all to prove that, in, you know, their case was that he was grooming young boys.
Right.
To, you know, and that's what these magazines were used for. And, of course, Nesero took that to say, you know, how hilarious is this that Michael Jackson likes Playboy magazine?
Yeah.
I mean...
He reads it for the articles.
I mean, because Playboy was in there. Now, there was a magazine called Barely There, I think, which was more geared to teens. But again, you got to think about who is Michael Jackson. He is a child teen person in a man's body. And so, yes, he's going to look at something.
So, yeah, any of the porn that was found, it was all, it was legal, basically. Like, there was no actual child pornography found in his possession. Because the thing I remember reading about was there was, like animal torture in some of it. Like, with the stuff that was discovered last year, when they were, like, they found this big cache, and there was, like, images of kids, animal torture, some gore was involved in that, and that was, I remember that, like, hit the news just last year, and it was, like, this kind of big thing, and then it just kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I went on, you know, USA Today, newspaper called me about it, and they asked me, and I commented about it at the time, and it was just over a year ago. There was no, that was a storage facility that had already been dealt with through, remember, the raid on Neverland included, I think it was 70 police officers. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
They sent that out to law enforcement there. And they took everything. Anything and everything they could. They ransacked. So...
Did they ride the rides? They were like, near a roller coaster. Yeah. How often were you here? How often are you here? Let's get up. Hold this box. I'm going to go on the loop to move.
Twirl. You know, I mean, they were having a
Oh yeah, they were at an amusement park. Yeah, I get that.
Sorry?
I said they were at an amusement park, so I get that they were going a little bit above and beyond searching and seizing.
Seizing with cotton candy in their hands.
Amusement park, believe me, because that place, the theaters and everything that Michael had in there, and he was a hoarder, so the stuff that he had, I mean, it's just like insane amount of stuff.
Okay.
It's very strange to look at it, the collections of stuff that he had, and the weird...
And
weird dolls.
And also, when you realize he's a hoarder, you realize that's why he has so much porn. Hoarders don't want to throw away porn.
Yeah. No,
yeah, that's true.
No,
yeah.
I'm not even a hoarder, and I don't throw mine away.
but the thing is, really, again, if you, the average person, if you were to live in one place for a long time, and you're a single guy, and somebody were to go through all of the stuff you ever had, what do you think? Do you think that they're going to find something?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying...
Be bad.
It's so outrageous. But the other thing, too, is about those allegations. If that was found, do you not think that somebody would have already sold that to TMZ by now, and we'd be seeing gorilla art that was drawn by Michael Jackson?
Yeah,
that's true.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Let's get some of that.
TMZ pays a pretty penny.
Yeah. Breaking news from Neverland Ranch! 80 gigs of hard drives of pornography!
I mean, it's ridiculous when you think about it, because they make the allegations, and this is again what Jackson complained about, cried about. He's practically in tears about the fact that people could just make allegations against him, and there's nothing you can do about it. It would feed off of itself.
Yeah. Let's you mentioned Tom Mesereau. He wrote the foreword to the book, and he was Michael Jackson's lawyer during the trial. He's going to be representing Bill Cosby on his upcoming retrial.
Oh,
that is the rumor. I'm not 1,000% sure, but I think he confirmed it in a off interview in Philadelphia. But yeah, he has been approached.
Do you see any parallels at all between the Michael Jackson case and what's happening with Bill Cosby? Or is this more of a thing where there probably is some truth behind those accusations?
I don't think there's any question there's truth behind those accusations.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, Mesereau is a phenomenal lawyer, and if you're going to hire somebody and you're in trouble, and you need a defense lawyer, he's the best in the business, as far as I can see. And I've been in trials for 20 years, watching criminal trials, you know, covering criminal trials. I mean, I've been at O.J.'s trial. I was there in Vegas when he got convicted. I mean, I've been at all these trials.
The good conviction.
Casey Anthony, you name it, I've been there. I'm telling you, Mesereau is the top.
Okay, nice.
So Cosby's great, because it's a great call on his part to get Mesereau, because what Mesereau is going to try to do is throw this out based on not enough evidence, and the fact that it's an old case, and you know, you almost got a he said, she said here. I don't know what proof, and if they can't, and I believe that they're not allowing a lot of these other accusers in, that's, you know, that's going to really hurt, and probably won't have the jury deliberated so long in the original trial against Cosby, because you don't have a smoking gun.
Yeah. I feel like Cosby is just super bummed he didn't die 3 years ago. Like, if he had died, he was like, I'm not about to die! And then they're like, and it's going to be in jail. He's like, that's no good. Like, he made it. Let's be honest. He's gone a good 40 years of getting away with some pretty harsh rapes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's just like, hey, I'm right about to die. My eye's going, you know? I'm on my way out. And then all of a sudden, just Hannibal Buress, just in a, like, a random aside of a riff, is like, you rape people.
Yeah.
And then it just blew up. Like, and that's weird, too, that everybody knew about Bill Cosby. Like comedians especially, but, like, Hollywood has known about that for so long. And it's funny that it just recently became a thing.
Yeah.
I know. And that is crazy when you think about it. Because in this day and age, you know, with TMZ and everything else, you think that everybody knows everything and everything comes out. But the fact is that it was back in time. And whatever dark secret it was, I can tell you, I did not know a thing about it. And actually, oddly enough, right before this news broke, I actually went to see Bill Cosby.
Oh, wow.
He was playing at a small venue called the Paramount Theater in Huntington, New York. And I
small.
Went. I was a Cosby fan.
I've seen him live, too. I have.
Yeah.
It was a great experience, to be honest.
He's so funny. So he comes out, and I mean, the crowd is going crazy. They're whistling. They're going nuts. And he just holds his hands up like, okay, got it. You know, he's so used to this complete and utter adoration. He's so comfortable in his own skin. He's wearing a sweatshirt. He sits down the whole time. He does his thing. He leaves the stage. Everybody's happy. And then, like, it was what was days later, this
yeah.
news broke. And when it first broke, friends of mine were saying, this is a bunch of BS. This is a woman who just happened to me. If this was something real, you know, why wouldn't this have come out years ago? Because the public, the public may have known, and his handlers knew. But the public didn't know.
Yeah. This is funny because I remember on 30 Rock, they did a joke about it. When he
yeah.
was it Godfrey was pretending to be Bill Cosby on the phone. And Tracy Morgan's like, I know what you did to my aunt. She trusted
yeah.
you.
Yeah,
and
that
like,
was way before it broke.
That was,
yeah,
2006.
I
want to say 2007. Like, it's crazy to see that now.
It
and
was such a thing. It was casually talked about.
Like, when I saw that video, when I saw the video of Hannibal doing the bit, I was like, oh, that's a good reference. That's good.
Yeah.
And I didn't think, I was like, oh, that's going to change everything.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't even hit me that way. Because I automatically just thought this was one of those things like, hey, did Christopher Walken murder that lady on the boat? Like, everybody's like, oh, maybe. like we're just kind of like, there's a lot of probably in Hollywood where we just gloss over, like Woody Allen, for example.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's like, yeah, he probably touched some kids. He's probably done a lot of nasty things. But, he's
been great.
Yeah.
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 I mean, obviously, there are people who can live it down, and there are people who can't. Woody Allen was somehow able to, jump over that threshold. It beats me how I know he's talented, but he never still had the same adoration that he did before, he went and married his daughter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, like, how, that just, like, in Living Color and Saturday Night Live made fun of it, and then everyone's like, it's fine now. That blows my mind. And his, I remember in his vows, in his marriage vows, he said, the heart wants what it wants. And it's like, that's a super molesty thing to say out loud.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, like, it wants what it wants. It's like, that's what you say when you're defending yourself against the father of the
but
child.
But let's be honest, if you say something really creepy in your vows, your anniversary is that much more special.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good point.
That's a good point. Because, you know what? Memories.
Yeah. That's what psychopaths live off of.
Yeah, but and it's sort of going in the direction that you were saying, where some people, it was like water off a duck's back, and then some people are just, it follows them forever.
Yeah.
And
some people, though, again, like Cosby, he was under the radar to the masses. Just like, I mean, the one parallel there is that Michael Jackson being possibly innocent has been under the radar to the masses.
Right, yeah.
What are you talking about? Like, that's not possible. You're kidding. I'm like, no, I'm not kidding. I'm really not kidding. Well, the same thing opposite with Cosby is when that first came out, the masses were like, what?
Yeah.
Who about this? Like, are you kidding? Like, and the insiders in Hollywood were like, oh, yeah, we knew about it.
Which is also weird because, like, in a way, having known about that in the past, like, we all kind of had an idea, it makes you feel like a fraction complicit. Like, in a way, which makes it even worse. Because, like, when I heard that, I was like, yeah, that's a thing people know about. And then I was like, wait, why have I never said something out loud about that? Like, it's all speculation. I wanted to ask a question for you, because we're talking about sort of these scandals and these legal scandals. What do you think about sort of the R. Kelly situation legally? Like, where his, because he seems to have been really Teflon over the past.
Splash proof, even?
Yeah.
The R. Kelly. That is a good question.
Surprised you with that one. I'm sorry.
Well, you did, because I don't know now his accusations that are current. A daughter is being held against her will, and he has a cult. It just, I don't know.
It is weird, but there were parallels for me with the MJ stuff, because it's another one of those, like, yeah, we've heard about that kind of a thing, and it's like, there are so many of his fans that love his music so much that they'll believe innocence no matter what.
I think
too.
The difference with R. Kelly, though, is there's, like, legal document. Like, the marriage certificate to Aaliyah, that's not forged. Like, yeah. That was filed with the state of Illinois. And that was, like, concrete proof that he at least had something for underage women.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we never really saw that with Michael Jackson. We just kind of heard.
Yeah.
So that.
Oh, there's definitely more there. And in the case of Jackson, it was more, if anybody knew anything, it had to be members of his inner circle. Whereas with Kelly, there's documentation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah,
I don't know.
It's exhausting.
It's a weird, wild world we live in. But I'm happy that we finally have an R&B star with a cult. We never had that before.
That's so true. It's cults have been predominantly white dude dominated.
Yeah, about time we brought it to this market.
2017. Yeah, we're really bringing it out.
You know what? First president, now cult leader. Guys, we are moving up in the ranks right now. I'm happy.
I'm killing it.
What I like is the fact that Kelly's inner circle are, all supposedly of legal age, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, all these allegations, he's been acquitted of any charges of making child porn.
Yeah, right.
He's apparently, I don't know whether or not he's ever going to have to answer to this.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
Disclosure agreements with him as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what Cosby needed to do.
It seems like he's... Yeah, exactly. Or just sign for them while they're passed out.
You know what? He should have hired them as actors and extras in his stuff in all his movies, made him sign NDAs.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, the thing with R. Kelly now, seems like he's got kind of a Menudo-type system in place where when one...
Once they get old, they just kick them out.
They just get replaced.
It's just an eternal boy band.
Yeah, and they got to hope that solo career goes well.
R. Kelly's
probably not a lot of Ricky Martins coming out of that.
Yeah, R. Kelly's Power Rangers.
I would like to just, again, distance myself from the views of Jeff May giving you the how to be a better rapist kit just now.
Look,
that was a little weird.
I'm not saying that that's a thing one should do. I'm saying if you don't want to get caught. It's like that Murder by the Numbers movie. Like, there's a way to get away with it, but, don't.
Yeah,
don't obviously. Do it. But if you're gonna.
But if you want to be a part of this cult, though, this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Or if you want to start your own cult, learn from the people ahead. If you want to, go for it.
So, before we get out of here, let's talk about your podcast. It's called Sex, Love, and Murder, and your next episode is about Clark Rockefeller. Is that correct?
Nice.
Yeah, do you remember him?
Yeah, there's a documentary. I watched a documentary about Clark Rockefeller, but I don't remember the entire story. I know it's a crazy one, though. Tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, so here's the deal.
Do your podcast on our podcast. Tell us everything you're going to talk about.
The thing is, one of the things the podcast is focused on is stories that involve twisted sexual triangles and crazy love stories that somehow go often wrong. And in this case... What's so amazing about Clark Rockefeller is, first of all, the guy had, 10 different names. He came over as a German immigrant when he was a teenager, and he lived in the United States from the 1970s until 2007 is when he kidnapped his own daughter as being a Rockefeller. So all those years, he's in the United States with all these different names, zigzagging across the country, and mostly living in the most wealthy parts of the country. So he moves to San Marino in the 1980s, which is right outside Pasadena, which is a very wealthy enclave. Okay, this is where folks like the eHarmony family have a place, where the Public Storage family have a place. Super, super huge money. And he embeds himself in that community, and he passes himself off as a baronet, which is, he has people believe that he's pure royalty. And he goes from there to ultimately having people believe that he's a Rockefeller, living in Manhattan. He married a Harvard MBA.
Wow.
Making $2 million a year. So this guy was good. I mean, you want to talk about genius.
Yeah.
Dial follow genius. that's his spine.
This guy's cool.
And it's crazy, but the main thing that I've talked about in this investigation that I do on sex, love, and murder is not just his whole evolution into becoming, quote-unquote, a Rockefeller, but the fact that there were two people that were missing in San Marino from 1985, at the time that he left there, that had never been found. It was a couple, a young newly
married. Oh, wow.
And somebody bought the house that couple was living in the 1990s. In 1994, they went to put in a swimming pool, and the pool people found a skull and the remains of the male, John Soas, who had been missing, you know, for almost 10 years. And they identified that person. The thing was, though, what's so interesting is that was 94. This guy was turning into a Rockefeller at that point. And the police could never put together that the guy they were looking for, who called himself Chris Chichester in San Marino, California, was that actually the guy who was Clark Rockefeller in New York. Remember, there's no internet really back then.
Right.
So, you know, Instagram. There's no people taking Facebook photos and whatnot. So, and he had changed his look. He had dyed his hair and all that. So there was, they knew that there was the guy who had lived on the premises was wanted in the disappearance of this person. Now they had remains that was now was murder, but now they don't know who Chris Chichester is because that's not a real person.
Wow. It's a good move.
It's
a simpler time back then. You can get away with a lot.
You know what's great? He started his career in Boston, then moved out to L.A. So if you want
just
to
like
see
Jeff.
Some parallels of my life with good old Clark, plus I used to be another name and I'm a serial killer. All those things.
A little bit different. He started in Connecticut and moved to L.A., but he wound up in Connecticut.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, it was a different time back then. The reason he got caught is because the only thing he cared about in this world was his daughter that he had with the Harvard MBA when he was a quote Rockefeller. And they got divorced in 2007 and he kidnapped his daughter.
Jeez.
And that went all over the news and that was made into a TV movie because, you know, it was Rockefeller. It was a kidnapping.
Yeah.
They actually caught him and they saved the girl. And the mother moved to England to get away from this.
Wow, that's crazy.
Imposter and the whole thing. And at that point, guys, when that came out in the news in 2007 or 2008, during the trial was 2009, actually. In my mind, you know, the way I think, I'm like, oh, no. There's more to this story than just a kidnapping. This guy was able to pull up being a Rockefeller. There are literally bodies buried somewhere. And I just knew it. I had goosebumps about it. That's when police actually put it together. That this guy's real name was Christian Carl Gerhardt's writer. That was his immigration.
Sounds like a diehard villain.
I'm telling you, know, this is the funny part, guys. You're kidding. This is the really hilarious part. Do you know how he was able to learn how to perfect his English and his way his pattern of speaking?
From watching Die Hard. Days. Go for it.
Watching Gilligan's Island.
There it is.
Yeah. Give it up for the coconuts.
He speaks like the Globetrotters now. thank God R. Kelly didn't kidnap his daughter.
Yeah,
no doubt. That is crazy that Gilligan's Island is the thing that he's calling everyone little buddy.
Thurston, come on, guys.
Oh, he was doing the...
Get boy, in the
uncle
of
you. Yeah, you know? You're Madonna lover.
Thurston Howell, the third millionaire.
Oh.
Impressions over there?
Oh, we're real comedians.
In order for me to do impressions, I have to turn around twice and say the name. So it would be Thurston Howell III. Guys, this is Thurston Howell III. And I have to turn around. It's a whole process.
Yeah.
You're spinning. You're still not getting it. That was the guy who did the voice of Mr. Magoo also. He was
mm-hmm.
a
good
actor.
Yeah. Yeah. Voice actor. Yeah.
Yeah.
His name was. He was a great character. Obviously, he was one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
In Millionaire.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a fun little tidbit.
Yeah. So yeah, that people should definitely. Do you know when does that episode of your podcast come out?
It just dropped.
Oh. So everyone, go listen to that. And also go listen to the episode of White Warren True Crime that Aphrodite is on with Caitlin and Carrie.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
So I really appreciate you guys having me on. And so the podcast just launched. There's actually two episodes out there. The first one's about, listen to this, a guy who was on a reality show who called Megan Watts a Millionaire, a VH1 show, who wound up being a cold-blooded murderer.
Isn't that the one where he puts her in a suitcase?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good episode.
And I had to go to Buena Park, California, in Orange County, to the dumpster.
Oh, wow.
I actually go to these places.
Nice.
And just like San Marino, I was there interviewing the neighbors and all of that. I had to go to that dumpster and, you know, just
interview the homeless guy that lives there. Yeah.
What that was like with the neighbors, you know, the person found that bloody suitcase. I mean,
did you get in a suitcase? See what that was like? Hilarious. This is the stuff I'm talking about. Yeah, this is the inside baseball people want to know. I like your method. I do like that. I really like that your commitment to
journalism, guys.
It's integrity and it's appreciated.
Yeah.
Great. Yes, it is method journalism. I like that.
Oh, most definitely. Go for it.
Well, you were great.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, once again proving that Michael Jackson is a much better entertainer than Prince.
Prince is better.
I'm sorry.
That's not what this podcast was about.
That's all I heard her say was Michael Jackson was better.
Aphrodite, you and I are going to stay out of this. We'll let them take each other out.
Michael was very jealous. Not jealous, but that was his one sore spot.
Right?
Yeah,
because Prince was better.
Michael Jackson wrote The Bartman, so there's that too.
Yeah. So is there anything else you want to plug or anything you want to tell everyone before we sign off?
I am really good. I just wanted to say, if you want Twitter at SLM Podcast, go there or find me on Facebook, Sex, Love, and Murder. And thank you so much for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it. Love your show.
Thank you so much for being on. We really appreciate it. And we will. This will be up this week, so we'll tag you in the tweet and everything when it goes up.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Have a good one.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay.
We have to erase the whole thing and start over.
Yeah, I don't know why I hope that's not going to sound weird because her.
It looked like it was coming through.
It was coming through, but it was coming through really quiet.
Yeah, you can fix the
little thing. Yeah, I'll go in and fix it.
Make Jess do it.
But, yeah.
Here, have some work on this one.
Yeah, more realistically, we'll have Jess do it. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, she was great. And Jeff was here. Why would you say something like that?
Wow.
The truth? That's what I was told to talk to and raised to do.
We should get the fuck out of here. Hey, next week, come to our second Pops live stand-up show at the Alex Theater in Glendale, 7:30 p.m. Doors open 8 p.m. The show starts. Your headliner, Alex Schmidt.
Yeah, I love Alex.
Also, John Fahey will
copyright
be there.
The Monday show.
Copyright the Monday show. Carrie Martin will be there. Vanessa Gritton will be there.
I know those people.
I will be there.
Who are you?
I am Quincy Johnson.
Oh, nice.
The second. Nice. And
does that mean I can't let you progress with me?
Right, exactly. So come out to that. Go to Unpop or go to eventbrite.com and search Unpops to reserve a spot. It's free, but space is limited. And we hope we see you at that. And subscribe to all our other podcasts on patreon.com/unpops. It's only $5 a month. Cheap fucks. Who else has stuff to plug?
What day is this coming out?
This is coming out this week, Wednesday.
Wednesday. Oh, well, if you're listening to this and you're in the Phoenix area, come out to Comedy on Main Street in Mesa, Arizona, 8 p.m. on Thursday? Yeah, it'll be on Thursday. Come hang out. We'll be in Mesa, kicking it. Me, Kevin Anderson, Samir Suri, friends of the show. We're going to have a good time. And then on the 22nd, come out to Nerd Melt for Blame Social Media.
Nice.
We got Tone Bell, Ron Funches, Moshe Kasher. It's going to be a good goddamn time.
Nice.
Denver lineup.
Jeff?
Minton Card is the second Friday of every month.
Edit that out, Brett.
Beautiful Magnolia, Blast from the Past. We got a great lineup, including just shored up some pretty great drop-ins by my man's Adam Todd Brown and possibly Quincy L. Johnson. The
gross!
What? Ugh. Along with a lot of other really, really great talented people. So come to that.
On the 10th, I think I'm on David Huntsberger's show.
Ooh. Oh, nice! Yeah, Huntsberger's show. That's a fun show. I'm coming for
in Culver City. I'm going to have to email because...
It's in Culver City? That doesn't
or maybe.
Sound
I don't know.
Right.
I'm going to have to figure it out.
I think it's in Koreatown. Unless it moved, it's still in Illinois.
Korea City.
Oh, that's even better.
Still at the Copper Still, right?
That's all. It's all good, baby. Ooh, it's all good. I'll find it.
The pupusas are still good.
Yeah, so we got that going for us. So check those things out. And then, you know, find us on the socials.
The socials.
Social. Subscribe.
Subscribe.
Leave us good ratings, too.
Yeah,
yep.
good ratings on iTunes. If you got, you know, call questions, comments, concerns at 505-386-7677.
Boom!
505-386-7677.
Fun Pops. It is 505
Fun Pops. I hate you both.
All right, let's get the fuck out of here. Quincy, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Jeff, say goodbye.
You gave the kid that Michael Jackson probably didn't touch rookie card.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you. Bristol Street. Bring a blood object to Bristol Street.